Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Signs was another example. Why did they come try to colonize a world when they could get fucking taken out by water? It's mostly water.
Why do you think that they're sitting around talking about, oh, well, they got a lot of H2O down there. Maybe they've never seen motherfucking H2O. Maybe where they're from, they don't have it. So when they're going to that planet,
do your research, bitch. Welcome to Scream Queen, a podcast about scary movies.
From people not typically depicted in scary movies.
Oh, feels good. Feels good to be good. Feels good to be back. Feels good to be vaxxed. Fully vaxxed and back in the studio. Drea, how are you?
Fine.
Yep. I like your glasses. Where are they from? Warby Parker?
Nah, bitch. These are Dior. You
okay,
don't get that.
Well.
Mm. Yours are from Warby. I could tell.
No, they're from Fabulous Frannies in New York. Shout out. But the thing is, like, they're vintage 70s frames. So if I sit on them, they're dead. Like, if I do anything wrong, they bend out of place. Like, they're so incredibly scratched. I can barely see out of them. Anyway, what I can see clearly is that we're in episode 2 of our 4th season in Scream Queen. We're back to our 3-act structure, as you know. This week, act 1, we're going to pour one out for Mercedes Mason in Quarantine 2. We're going to talk about another one, Quiet Place 2. And we're going to end with a scream queen who spends way too much time in a bunker, Mary Elizabeth Winstead in 10 Cloverfield Lane. Take it away.
All right, Tommy. So for our pour one out, we're getting into Miss Mercedes Mason as Jenny in Quarantine 2, Terminal.
We want to give some ceremony to the untimely death of a character who maybe should have made it all the way through or didn't die in the right place. Mercedes Mason, you might know as Ophelia in Fear the Walking Dead, a character who ran away but still never got anywhere. The essence of the quarantine movies is that some kind of errant strain of rabies has gotten out and is now turning people into zombies. The first one happened in an apartment building. And the first one was a found footage, one of those found footage movies that purported to be sort of like a documentary or was like a nightly news segment or whatever. And it was based on a Spanish horror film. The second one is completely different. It's on a plane, and apparently one of the passengers got infected by whatever was happening in the first film. And it makes its way through the plane. The plane gets grounded. It can't go anywhere. They end up in the terminal, as you can tell from the title.
Clever. I see what they did there.
And, you know, it's all kind of twists and turns. People get eaten, people get bit, people get turned into rabies zombies or whatever. And Mercedes Mason and the final boy, this little rug rat who has to be protected the entire time. I guess like they're going to incinerate the terminal. They're making their way towards the end. And at the last possible second, homegirl gets jumped by one of these dudes. Well, one of these zombie dudes. They fend him off, you know, and they're sort of in the tunnel making it towards the end, and you see her kind of shake. It's not diabetes. You know, she's got the shakes a little bit. It ain't Alzheimer's. It's rabies. And you know at that moment, because they see the literal light at the end of the tunnel, that little boy is going to make it out. And she, who has been protecting him this entire film, gets bitten at the very end. And she's just like, go. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do it without you. And she's like, no. Like her voice is like changing and she sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And she's like, go. And he's like, no, no, no. And she's like, you have to go. And so he gets out. And then, you know, at the very last second, she like turns into a full zombie and is like trying to get at him through the grate. It's just, it's a mess because like they did her character so wrong. Like a final girl does overcome every obstacle. She beats every baddie. She is resourceful. She is resilient. She is kind. She's everything that a final girl is. And they killed her right before the end. That's why I got to pour one out for Mercedes Mason, because they didn't need to do that to her.
Yeah, that sounds rude as shit.
It was rude. Rude. It was uncalled for. It was uncouth. And frankly, misogynistic, I believe. And racist.
Mm-hmm.
Because she sacrificed herself for the little white boy. I guess what they wanted to do was set up a final girl and kill her. You know what I mean? Like, they wanted to subvert your expectation because, like, her face is on the poster. She's the main character. She is the stewardess of this plane. And you follow her throughout the entire action. So I guess in a way they were like, we want to set you up for the experience of like a final girl and like take that away from you.
I think they break rules when they do shit like that. That's just like how it's not supposed to play out.
Yeah.
And that this is after that threshold you were talking about the like the F-150 bro.
Yeah, this is definitely a bro film, like a bro horror film. Because the thing is, like, prior to the broification of like the sort of Eli Rothing of horror and the Saws and all that kind of stuff and the Hostels, I was used to being scared. You know, I was used to pain, but these films focus on agony.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't like.
It's not. Fun's not the best word for it, but it takes the fun out of horror mm-hmm. to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like to go and, yeah, I'm seeing somebody get fucked up, you know, but it's like there's an art to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story that makes sense. There's humor in the right places if it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. That's how shit is supposed to pan out. But yeah, there is something, it's like people that like serial killers, like serial killers mm-hmm. and shit, mm-hmm. like they don't understand there's a difference between being knowledgeable on something and then taking it just a step too far
and being swallowed by it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like when you watch too much bloody fucked up shit, you know, people being tortured, and which is mostly what these films depict.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gonna do something to your brain.
Yeah.
Clearly it's already done something to your brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're putting it out into the world.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to censor anything like too extreme, but if there's no purpose for it, you know, then I will question it.
Yeah. And again, this just like hit a little close to home because, you know, we've been doing quarantine. And so these quarantine movies, I was a little bit like Mayhem and like those kinds of movies where you're like, you're trapped in a space. It just hit a little different in the pandemic.
Just a tad.
Just a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. Great choice.
Yeah.
Great fucking choice, Tommy.
I just wanted to remind everybody where we are.
Just a little trauma for that ass.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. It's trauma.
All right. So we're pouring one out. For Miss Mercedes Mason, they did you dirty.
I'm so sorry. And they did you dirty on Fear the Walking Dead as well. So here's to hoping you get some redemption, Mercedes Mason.
All right. We're getting into our main discussion, A Quiet Place Part 2.
So let me tell you a little something about Quiet Place Part 2. This was the first movie I saw in a theater. In a year and a half, like since pandemic. This was not a quiet place, bitch. This place was very loud. To the point where I was like sitting there like, were movies always this loud? Like, was the theater always assaulting my ears like this? Or am I just like new?
Oh, you that bitch that has to start bringing earplugs to the theater.
I was literally like covering my ears. It's honestly, you know, I'm a jumpy bitch. I can still, what I've learned, this hack for myself, I don't have to shield my eyes as long as I plug my ears.
Mm.
Because sometimes it's the sound leading up to it that like really gets like me jumpy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I was, so at times this was A Quiet Place. So A Quiet Place 2, written and directed by, what's his name? John Krasinski. 6'3" looking ass. It follows the events of the first film. So the Abbott family has to leave their home and venture into the larger world and sometimes discover that the greatest danger isn't the monster. Sometimes people are the greatest danger. But this also very smartly picks up the day that the creatures landed in a sequence that I thought was so well done. And it didn't explain anything. It didn't go into the origins of the creature. It was just like, oh, there's this thing far off. And then like sort of like in the background, some sort of noise is subtly building until you realize that they're being overtaken by these creatures in like a really, really bombastic way. I really adored that sequence. What did you think about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were that was such a cool way to like acknowledge films like War of the Worlds and The Day the Earth Stood Still and even Independence Day, you know, but you feel the tension and everything building up to that moment where they're sitting in the stands at the baseball game, watching everything happening in the distance and realizing shit's about to, you know, something's off. And it doesn't quite happen there. It's when they're walking to the car and then all of a sudden, you know, that motherfucker just this giant praying mantis or whatever the hell they are.
It's a sort of like the dangers of suburbia because it's set in a town where you wouldn't expect. I mean, the thing is like those towns are totally beset by the opioid crisis, but it's like this suburban all-American town that is then suddenly overrun. You know, and there's something about playing and fucking with people's idea of safety. Mm-hmm. Like I'm here, I'm safe, I have my family. You know, they've bought into the trappings of heteronormativity. Mm-hmm. They've the husband, the wife, the two kids and the baby on the way. You know, that it's all like they got it all. You know, I'm sure they got jobs. They know what they're doing. John Krasinski's fine ass, 6'3". I would pay to have sex with him. But like but it is like the inversion of that safety. And I liked how the danger came up in a place of safety. I think that's what horror, when it does it well. Like with Chucky, like your childhood doll is the thing that's trying to kill you. You know, I like that a lot. I had some reservations about this film, but I liked it a lot. So when the Abbott family kind of ventures out into the larger world, it's because of the events in the previous film. John Krasinski is dead. Spoiler alert. He died to save his family, but they have figured out that by hooking up their child's hearing aid to like a speaker or whatever, it could overpower these monsters that have supersonic hearing. And they kind of walk into the world that way and they meet, what's his name from 28 Days Later?
Killian
Murphy, whose dick you definitely did see in 28 Days Later. I remember that, although you fell asleep during that movie, but I was up the whole time. And I was waiting to see his swinging member. And he's gone kind of feral. And you realize that he's the version of that family, but he lost his kids. Like, because we see him with the kids in the very beginning of the film, we realize that like he has lost his children. And he is an example of what they could be. You know, like he's a grim, like portent of the future. Like this is what happens when you lose your kids. I mean, they already have because they lost their baby in the opening of A Quiet Place Part One. What did you think of him and his character and like his? Because he was really, really. It turned out they were like friends back in the day, but he was like really reluctant to help this family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that was understandable because yeah, he just lost his and life's different, and also you can't trust people. During, you know, that's what typically happens, unfortunately, during dire times like that.
It just reminded me of like early pandemic when people was like busting each other over toilet paper. Mm-hmm. And it's like civilization is a very thin membrane.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you peel it back a little bit and people just get fucking vicious.
Yeah. No, they're fucking stupid.
But
yeah.
He's also an example because like our family, the Abbott family in Quiet Place Part One, and as they go into, they've been largely self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. You know, they've lived in isolation. They haven't dealt with the outside world. And they just kind of like, you know, it's like the rich people in New York during pandemic who just like moved to their Vermont home, you know, to wait it out or whatever. Like that's kind of what they did. They were a little, even in this world, they were a little bit privileged, right? But Killian Murphy's character is someone who had contact with other people, who knew how vicious other people were, who didn't walk into the world with trust, who walked into the world with reserve, but with strength. You know, and I could see how his character got that way. And it was interesting to see him work his way out of it. Mm-hmm. Wish we didn't have to sacrifice the black character in order for him to get there. But
why is it that I waited this whole damn movie for Jaimin? Mm-hmm. And then they show me my boy Jaimin. Mm-hmm. And then they destroy his whole fucking world. Mm-hmm. They come up in this, just like some people do, coming up and motherfucking colonizing. Mm-hmm.
That was fun. Cillian Murphy brought that creature on board like fucking Christopher Columbus and smallpox, bitch. Like, he just came in, ravaged that whole world.
The whole, they were living comfortably. They were fine.
They didn't know nothing about no space monsters.
They did not ask for that.
Mm-mm.
And I'm mad. I'm mad about that whole situation because these motherfuckers can't swim.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, so let them drown.
Don't get me started let on them this drown. Particular derivation of the plot, because why the fuck?
Oh, here we go.
Are you some space demons
but that's,
landing on a planet that is mostly water?
That's not an argument.
And you can't swim.
That's not an argument.
You can't even float. You just sink with your iron bodies.
That's not an argument.
That is an argument, as I say it's an argument. I just did not understand why some space demons land on a planet that is mostly water and they can't swim.
And you said the same shit about Signs.
Signs was another example. Why did they come try to colonize a world when they can get fucking taken out by water? It's mostly water.
Why do you think that they're sitting around talking about, oh, well, they got a lot of H2O down there. We might want to. Maybe they've never seen motherfucking H2O. Maybe where they're from, they don't have it. So when they're going to that planet,
do your research, bitch.
They don't know until they
you
up
don't
in
got
it.
Scientists.
They don't know until they
aliens
up in
don't
it.
Got scientists. They can master intergalactic clearly, travel, but clearly, they don't know what water is.
Clearly, they don't.
I don't think you know what water is.
I don't think you understand.
I think you're thirsty.
I think, bitch, I am gonna murder you. Is what I'm gonna do. You ain't gonna make it to see the premiere.
So
of your show.
These scientists don't. I mean, these aliens don't have scientists to let them know what water is. They have never. They've never been in contact with water before, and they come to the earth that's covered with water and they can't swim. All I'm saying is when I figured that part out, I was like, I'm a little bit checked out of this movie now.
I mean, the movie did not completely do it for me. I was not, I didn't like the first one like at all. Mm. And I'll be honest, I laughed when that kid died. It was funny.
And you accused me of not liking kids.
Oh, well, that little kid was annoying as shit. And that was dumb as
they
fuck.
They had no business having a baby.
And letting him run around. Mm-mm. And that was annoying as fuck. Mm-mm. I feel like I've seen that in real life. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen that kind of behavior.
Oh, yeah. That
people
white
just letting
kid.
Their kids mm-hmm. just running around. So mm-hmm. I was just like, he's about to get eaten. Your baby's about to get eaten. Oh, your baby got eaten. Should have been running around like that. I was just like, you know, that I laughed and people looked at me like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Mostly me. Because I don't like kids, that I want them to die. Oh, just because I don't want them to live doesn't
lies,
mean I want them to die.
Lies. He's oh, just saying that on. For the mic, people.
I liked the ambition of this movie. I think it was, as a sequel, one of the more successful sequels.
It was. I really liked Millicent, the deaf girl.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked her character a lot. She came through mm-hmm. in like a big way. Because mm-hmm. Her brother, he was not.
He was a little bitch.
Oh my God. He's so fucking
go
annoying.
In a vault somewhere.
He's so fucking annoying.
He's trying to split his oxygen between him and the baby. The baby has no business being in this world. In a world where there's creatures who attack you. I know I wouldn't live in this world because a bitch snores. They would come take me out of my sleep like that. I have borderline sleep apnea, bitch. Like, I would not live in this world.
Yeah, I was digging the Reagan Abbott, played by Millicent Simmons. I thought she did a really great job. And whatever happens in part three, I'm like really excited to see.
Are they doing a part three?
They could.
I mean, I think they should. I mean, the thing is, like,
it ended like they could.
We talked about this with Fear Street, but it was like a new idea. It's not a remake. It's not a reboot. It's an original idea. And I think, like, I mean, if the box office did well enough, they're going to give us a part three, right?
Yeah.
What I didn't like about this movie, and just between you and me, and no one else is going to know this, but just between you and me, from the trailer, I thought Jaimin and
was in the whole fucking movie.
Yes.
And they made us wait to the very end, and then they killed his ass. Explain.
But I also thought that him and Cillian were going to be a gay couple. Because in the trailer, it shows them putting the kids into a closet. And I was like,
wasn't sure.
Aw.
I just thought they were homies. You wanted some. You wanted a sex scene is what you wanted.
I wanted some dick and butt and mouth.
Dick and butt and mouth. In that order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was set up to believe that they were going to be a gay couple with kids, and they were not. I don't approve of, you know, gay couples having children because I don't believe in children. But if they want to have them, that's fine. And I thought that's what I was getting set up for. And that's not what it was at all. So that, I was upset.
Yeah, that's false advertising. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, we call false advertising. We call bullshit.
We call bullshit. Did you suspect? I didn't think the water thing was. I didn't think that was going to be a thing.
I didn't think there was going to be
some island haven where there were people living without these things.
Yeah. I didn't see any of that coming. I thought that was actually pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I was low-key hating all those people living on that island.
Just privileged. But just you got kumbaya and shit, like having chilling. Fires and just making s'mores and bullshit and like having story time.
Yeah. That was like that Vermont situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. And you know what? I thought the water thing was funny, like that they couldn't swim and shit, but it was also unnecessary. I was just like, you didn't even have to put that in there. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't bother me the same way it bothers you.
I didn't say it bothers me. I think it's stupid.
I think that's exactly what you said.
I didn't say that. I never said it bothered
me. Oh, it's stupid now?
Whatever. It just, I don't even think about it. I don't even care. It doesn't even matter to me. I think not at all. What did you think of the, those fucking cannibalistic, that little horde of white people.
And one of those guys that that guy, Scoot, Scoot McNairy. He's in like everything. He was the main like scraggly looking dude.
I don't know how they lived so long into this pandemic.
Because they already have they got all the diseases clearly. So they're just, he's in Narcos. He's like one of the main, and then he's in Monsters, Killing Them Softly. He's in a lot of shit. Scoot McNairy, this guy. Oh, move your tiny computer.
My computer is voluminous. Oh, yeah. He kind of looks like Homeboy from Scream.
Yeah, yeah. Skeet. He looks Skeet. Scoot looks like Skeet.
Skeet, 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 motherfucker. the sort of, like, I don't know, after times cannibalistic, wounded looking ass people.
That little girl.
How? I don't understand how they managed to survive that long into the sound pandemic and not.
Yeah.
They got taken out pretty easy.
Well, maybe. So, okay. I'm not going to give them any credit, but maybe they knew that those things couldn't be in the water. Maybe they had seen that. That's why maybe they stuck by the water. Mm. That's the only thing that saved them.
Because they were pier folk.
Yeah.
They was
stuck
on the pier.
Right by that water. Yeah, that's probably what saved them.
Huh. I think you thought more about that than the screenwriter did. If we did get a part 3, where would you like to see them go?
Homegirl, Millicent. Or Reagan. I wanted to pick up from her and her mama doing some badass shit out there.
She's clearly the most interesting character in these films.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know if she's played by somebody who's deaf or hearing impaired?
I'm pretty sure she must be. Because these times, I'm pretty sure like people are pretty sensitive to that. But let me be certain before I say yes.
I liked her character because, you know, what she gives us in the sort of final girl trope is the kind of vigilance to want her family to be safe. And she's not afraid to venture out. You know, like her brother's a little bitchy cowers.
She is a deaf American actress. Okay. Yeah.
So her brother's like a little cowery. You know what I mean? Like he plays it close. He's kind of mama's boy or whatever. But like she's like, I'll go out there. Like, you know, there's something about her bravery that might be like tied into some sort of childhood ignorance. But at the same time, you know, you recognize that as like a character trait that will lead her into another film. You know what I mean?
Like she's fearless. Yeah. And yeah, she's a survivor. She's a final girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really liked that storyline. I really enjoyed Killian coming to her rescue and mm-hmm. trying to be a better person. And
right. And he gets changed because of her bravery. Mm-hmm. And he sees something. I think what she does for us in the film is also what she does for him as a character, which is give him something to fight for,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like resets his narrative and reframes the idea of what society could be. Then he came and destroyed it. But like,
yeah.
I knew as soon as they had a perfect idyllic island life.
I was like, oh, this is going to get fucked up.
Yeah, no, all these people is going to die.
Oh, y'all showed up and I guarantee you brought something with you.
What I didn't get about Jaimin is he gives him a ride to this radio station, this garage, and then at the last moment, it's like family.
No, it didn't make any sense. It didn't. He hid your okay. So you put your son in this closet or whatever, and his friend, and he seemed like he knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, like he was on it. Like him and Killian are about to fucking go handle things on that island. Mm-hmm. So for him to go run back out there, that was, what was that? It didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't, because that character existed to die.
Yeah.
He wasn't supposed to do anything else but die spectacularly.
But it was like, the way they did it, it was so careless, mm-hmm. and there was no thought put into it. That's mm-hmm. what was so upsetting about that death. It was as if they forgot to edit it properly. It was like they did a one run through and then forgot to finalize that piece. It felt unfinished.
And I wonder if I would feel the same way if it wasn't a black person. Because to see needless black death on screen is not something that I...
That's the other reason. There's only like two black people in the whole movie, the cop and somebody else. So, and Jaimin. So, yeah. So you, and they're dark black people. Yeah. So you're going to recognize them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you took them out. It's fucking rude. That's all I have to say
about that. It didn't make sense. I didn't want it. I don't think any audience member wanted it. So then I'm like, okay, so that's why they gave us death. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't believe it. Mm-mm. I didn't believe it because the little bit of his character that we did get,
he didn't seem like he was
going to be the one who's going to waffle at the very end.
No, he's a leader.
Like a little bitch.
Yeah, it didn't. It was just a disservice to his character.
Yeah.
I thought that was really lame. And I don't know who's... I would imagine the producers did that. Mm-hmm. That seems like a move. Somebody would walk in there and be like, no, we don't like that. Let's take that out and do some shit like this. Thanks.
Yeah. And I...
Or maybe Jaimin pissed somebody off. Mm. Who knows? Mm. Mm.
I would like to mount that man.
Tommy's been indoors. Y'all forgive him. He's all right.
I think in the third movie, I do want to see the daughter.
Big time.
Like, as the more of the central character again. Yeah. I wonder, like, would it be... I don't think it would be them living an idyllic island life, though.
No. No, no, no. They're still out there, like, roughing it. But they have more... Maybe they have more... I think they're gaining more ground in the third film.
Did they transmit something from the radio?
Yeah. And then she... And at the very, very end, she does that. And then that's how it ends. So you're like... It's set up for... her to go out there and start taking these motherfuckers out.
I feel like it would be like let's say, for example, that after the second film, most of the people know how to get, like, it would be her rooting out the last of these creatures. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah. No, that's what I could see. I could see her going around and taking them out.
Overall, did A Loud Place do it for you? It was not A Quiet Place.
I liked it better than the first one.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Me too. And I think a part of it had to do with that opening sequence.
They killed it with that opening sequence.
It was almost like a oneer because of how it, like, the camera moved with the characters.
It was really, really good.
It kept up the energy. Even before anything got scary, I knew something was about to pop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just because of the way the camera moved with them and how it followed them and like... I was on edge. You know, I'm want to be on edge. I'm a little bit of a jumpy bitch.
Oh, yeah. You like it.
But it did it.
Like, you
like the pain. The anticipation of it. Like, there was something about it that was so electric and so kinetic. And mm-hmm. I really, really, really appreciated the opening sequence. So, good on you, John Krasinski.
Yeah. Good on you, Jim Halpert. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that meme where it's like he went from gym to gym and it was J-I-M to G-Y-M because he's all buff now?
Oh, I know. Freaking Jack Bauer and shit. I still can't buy him as Jack Bauer.
No, I can't watch any of those. No, he's always going to be looking to the camera and giving me a,
What?
Okay, should we get into our Scream Queen of the Week?
Let's do it.
So, this week, Act 3, the way we always end every show, we've got a Scream Queen for you. And you know, we don't always like to big up white women on this show, but sometimes there's one that just does the shit in a way where you're like, okay, bitch.
Okay, I see what you did there.
And this week, it's Mary Elizabeth Winstead in 10 Cloverfield Lane, another quarantine classic.
Claustrophobic.
Bottle, in a bottle, you know what I mean? Underneath in a bunker somewhere. I'm curious, Drea... have movies like these changed for you since the pandemic? Like those claustrophobic existing in a couple of rooms.
I think that I normally haven't liked that sort of film. I don't, the idea of claustrophobia, like that very much does scare me, terrifies me. Like with films like, was it called Host? From there to current quarantine films, I think they're improving. Mm-hmm. I feel like, because I already like to be inside, I'm already very much an introvert in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I'm just watching a film like, it's kind of like watching my life already. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm low-key been ready for a pandemic. I know a lot of people say that shit, and I really feel that way.
Yeah. But the thing about 10 Cloverfield Lane, and even something like Rope, you know, that exists in one place, mm-hmm. it very much feels like a play mm-hmm. to me rather than a film. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, 10 Cloverfield Lane gets bigger and starts bigger and ends bigger than just like the one room that it's enclosed
but
in for most of the film.
But it mainly takes place, yeah.
Yeah. And in that way, I notice like the blocking a little bit more, like the choreographing of the bodies and the space. And there was a particular anxiety. I mean, shout out to John Goodman mm-hmm. because everybody knows him as Dan. You know, everybody knows him as Dad. Like he's such a father figure in television that for him to play menacing, and he did menacing very, very well, I thought.
Well, I mean, I guess if you know Coen Brothers films, you know he can do menacing he's pretty good. And I'll, like, so if you go with like Raising Arizona, he's a nut in that. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other Coen Brothers films where he's a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. So, but he did it in like the indie route. Mm-hmm. So he didn't really take the mainstream route with those kind of characters.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, even in The Big Lebowski, he's a weird army vet. Mm-hmm. You remember him in that? And mm-hmm. he's like a total dick to Steve Buscemi the whole time. Such an asshole. But I still love him. He's always lovable Dan.
It's weird. It's weird. And I think that was a brilliant piece of casting mm-hmm. on their part, because I did believe him when he got a little bit softer in this movie. Because mm-hmm. at first he starts out very menacing and you're just like, this thick dude gonna kill me.
Mm-hmm. You gonna eat me?
Yeah. And then, you know, as they get further into it and they're playing board games, like da-da-da-da, you're just like, okay, maybe this is fine. And then they play that, I think it was like charades or something like that. And he gets really scary and he's talking about Santa Claus or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he gets scary again. And you're like, this menace exists underneath the surface of this character at all times.
You could always pick up that tension from him mm-hmm. the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And like, no matter how good things get, if you step on an eggshell the wrong way, he's going to get violent. Mm-hmm. And that just reminded me about being a child and being around meth heads. Because meth was a big problem on the res when I was a kid.
I know, yeah.
And like, you know, they could be really fine. Jumpy. And they could be excited, you know, and then in the next second attack you. And I was like, oof.
Oh, that's a funny parallel because, yeah, in Imperial Beach, it mm-hmm. was, meth was just all over San Diego.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it was a big problem down there. And you know who was on meth. Mm-hmm. It was all mm-hmm. of the eyes. Mm-hmm. 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 I remember one time, this is a weird connection. My friend came over because she did some and couldn't go home. This is I was like 14. She came over like middle of the night, knocking on my window. I'm like, what the fuck? And we stayed up all like until like 8, 9 in the morning watching Roseanne. She couldn't go to sleep.
Oh, God.
So I was just thinking about John Goodman and we were watching Roseanne.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Can't watch Roseanne no more. That's another scary movie.
Man, Roseanne done fucked that whole shit up for everybody.
They moved on. They call it the Conners now.
The Conners now. So Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I thought, did a really good job. Because like, super competent, right? Fashioned herself. Because in the beginning, we don't know whether this is just like a crazy man with a bunker or whether aliens actually have landed. And it isn't until she makes a break for it, comes to the surface and sees like a woman trying to claw her way into the bunker and like dies of noxious fumes or whatever, that we then realize the stakes of the film. It is aliens. Aliens are here. We have to be in this bunker for safety. And I think that's the point at which the sort of like trusting him starts to happen and he gets a little bit softer to her. But then immediately when he gets menacing again, she's like, I got to get a plan to get out of here. So mm-hmm. she finds a pattern for a hazmat suit or something like that. And then just starts to like make that out of plastic and like a plastic bottle and all that kind of stuff. She like does it in her room in secret. And so I thought, you know, like she has all of the ingredients of like a great final girl. She's resourceful. She is a quick thinker. She starts to realize, I think she has to fix a vent. And she realizes that this daughter who John Goodman has been talking about was actually a child that he fucked.
Oh, shit.
And like died in the bunker in like the vent space and had tried to claw something into the wall. And like bits of her fingernails were like stuck up there. And like, yeah, it's...
I was like, whoa, why'd you have to throw that shit in there? But I mean, I get why they did it. You never know who you're going to get trapped in with during a situation like that. And you don't know who you're with. You just never know what's going on in somebody's head.
Yeah.
And that shit is...
Ooh. But I believed, after that was established, I really believed in Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character and her desire to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And what did you think about the acid?
The acid's really good.
It's gnarly.
It's really good. Yeah, I was watching it this morning and I was just like, oh yeah. It was like 7:30 in the morning. I'm like, it's kind of early for this.
I mean, her friend who's like been helping her this whole time, mm-hmm. there's that moment where he's like, where do these scissors come from or something like that? And he's like, oh, I wanted to, he said something like, I stole them because I wanted to feel powerful like you or something like that. And then mm-hmm. he just like throws him in that vat of acid. And I was like, damn, bitch. That was a little extra.
Just a little
bit. John Goodman.
I knew he wasn't going to make it though.
Yeah, yeah. So then this film goes from being a bottle episode. It goes from being confined to this one world. So she finally gets out and John Goodman is no longer the threat, right? She neutralizes him. He gets incinerated or whatever. And a little bit of acid gets into him or whatever. Then she gets out and then it is actual literal aliens. And then the film shifts from being an intimate drama to sci-fi. How do you think, do you think it pivoted well?
Completely. Mm. I mean, it was, you were in that world. I believed all of that shit was going down. Like I was able to take that journey and yeah, I stayed on board with it the whole time.
You know what I kind of thought was, you know, when she leaves the bunker and she's in her hazmat suit and there's like a tear in it and she has to like duct tape it really quickly or whatever. And like is like sitting there and like breathing heavily and then realizes that she can take her suit off. I feel like that was the first time I took a mask off outside. You know, because I was like, I would always go outside with a mask on. And then I was like, is it okay to like breathe fresh air? Can I like take my mask off outside?
No, really. I'm still in that dilemma in some ways here in Los Angeles. Like just because, you know, as soon as they took down that mask mandate, I was like, not for me.
Nope.
Not for me.
Not gonna be me. And it's weird because like I'm working in a television room right now. It's virtual, but like I was like, so are y'all taking your masks off? And like 3/4 of the room was like, no. And then 1/4 was like, I don't do it anymore. I was like, I don't know. It's not even coronavirus. I haven't gotten sick with COVID, but I haven't gotten sick with anything like since I've been wearing a mask. Like I haven't gotten a cold or a flu or nothing. I'm like, I think I'm just going to keep doing this.
Yeah. Why not? Why not stick to with that thing that's just seems to be working?
Do you think Cloverfield, because like Cloverfield Paradox came after this and that was kind of shitty. But like, do you think there's a future for Cloverfield films?
I mean, I this was the only one of these type of films that I liked. Mm. All the other ones I couldn't give a shit about.
So you didn't like the found footage Cloverfield first one?
Nah, it gave me a headache. Mm. I didn't like it at all.
Do you like found footage films at all?
Some of them.
Okay.
Yeah. I like those, what are they called? Like Record or something like that. Uh-huh, like they're like a anthology series of like these found tapes. Mm-hmm. They're like snuff films or whatever. Those are kind of cool.
So you're into snuff films, what you're saying?
Big time.
Okay.
You're going to be on my next one.
No! I'm just asking because this film ends in a way where she's making the decision to confront. So she's survived her own intimate encounter with aliens outside of the bunker in the house, whatever. And she gets in the car and drives away. And then she hears a beacon or like she hears a radio signal that says, you know, we could really use anybody who's out there, any survivors, you know, we're beating them back, you know, come to Houston or wherever she was, like whatever city she was by. And she makes the decision to like turn around and like go towards the city and like fight these aliens. That's why I was like, there's going to be we're going to follow up with her, right?
I mean, there's always the potential to do so. And yeah, you could with this film, but it's not impossible. Mm-hmm. We go back to franchises all the time, yeah. Like years and years later, decades later. So it hasn't been that long since that film came out. I don't see why they couldn't. Well, I mean, John Goodman's not coming back. Yeah. But it's just. It, but they can bring back Homegirl, and she's. I like her. I liked her in Birds of Prey and all that shit. She's good.
Oh right, she was in Birds of Prey. She mm-hmm. does a. She's like a really good action star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to Scream Queen. We are produced by Kenya and Alex at Domino Sound. I am Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs, HeyTeebs on Instagram because I deleted Twitter.
And this is Drea Washington. You can find me at Hey Girl Hey. That's HeyGrlHey on the gram.
And in the scary movie of your life,
you better
Scream Queen.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.